Thank you very much, David, and good morning, everybody. When John very kindly asked me to come along today to talk about e-books, I was first of all very excited by the opportunity, but then panic set in because John had told me the theme of today's conference is new models, new tools, new opportunities. And as David just said, we've been working in this area for about 10 years now. And I thought, bloody hell, what am I going to say that's new? Because for many years, and I heard people discussing these things when we were having our coffee just now, we've been struggling and talking about the same problems. The problems for libraries in finding a model that facilitates e-access to users of the library, particularly students. For years, we have been talking about the problems of restrictive DRM, restrictive licensing, and so on and so forth. And I think probably the business model for e-books through the library has been a constant theme of what we've been discussing at this conference and many other venues. So, so I was in a bit of a panic and thinking about what I was going to say on the theme of new. And I started reflecting on a few things that had happened to me over the past 6 months. And there are a couple of events, and one made me think about, well, what is holding us back? And I'm going to tell you about that. The other thing I reflected on was that £9,000 a year is a lot of money. And then, what is new? Well, I think what is new is the technology, taking the opportunity that the technology offers us. So the first of my reflections was something that happened to me in December. And I was invited by the Department of Culture, Media and Sport to give evidence to an independent review of e-lending in public libraries. Now, admittedly here we are talking about academic libraries, but I think this committee I went to on public libraries raises a lot of the questions and the issues that we're also facing in academic libraries. Now, my first problem with this committee was the very title, e-lending. Now, how do we lend an e? I mean, how is that possible? And when students in our universities want to use a book, do they think that they're, in the e-environment, do they think they're borrowing it? I mean, I don't think they do. So I think the very title of this government committee sums up the sort of situation that we are in when we're still using terminology and phrases that belong to a print world and a different paradigm. The report from that committee was published in March this year, and I'm going to just show you a few little snippets from that report. You can find the whole thing yourself on the Department for Culture, Media and Sport website. But I love this bit from the report, and it talks about the friction. And it says here, the publishers and booksellers fear that it would be too easy to borrow a book for free. So easy, in fact, that the borrower might never need to buy another book. When I was giving my evidence to this committee, there was a panel of the great and good publishers, agents, authors, and so on. And I was talking to them about the problems that we experience in academic libraries. And one of the people on the panel, a rather elderly publisher, said to me, do you mean to tell me that these students are looking at our books on the internet? And again, I think if we look at this report, we can see where this is all coming from. As far as possible, the digital loan of a book should emulate its printed counterpart. But not only that, each copy of a digital book, I'm not quite sure what a copy of a digital book is, but nonetheless, each copy of a digital book should be loaned to one reader at the time. Well, that makes sense, doesn't it, in the environment? And if that were not enough, we must pretend that digital copies of books should be deemed to deteriorate, ensuring their repurchase after a certain number of loans. Now, thinking about this, this is like saying, you know, if we went back to the beginning of the last century and we have our horseless carriage and we say, okay, we're going to pretend our horseless carriage has a horse and we're only going to go at 5 miles an hour because we want to pretend there's a horse. Oh, and by the way, just to really pretend it's a horse, we're going to buy it some hay so that the haymakers don't go out of business. And I think that sums up very much where we are in this whole issue. We are trying to preserve, and of course for publishers amongst you, I do understand you have a duty to preserve your businesses. But we are trying to work in an old paradigm, and it is not progressive. If we think about the landscape we are in 2013, in the digital age, and the issues that we face. I mean, if we think about the issue of emerging economies, global competition, and the need to have a workforce that is more literate, more trained than ever before, what is our answer to that problem? Ah, we'll pretend the digital book is a paper one and only let one person read it at a time. So it's not progressive. And I think that's the real problem that we face, how we work in the new digital age. The other thing that I reflected on was a presentation I heard last month at the UKSG conference. And this was very interesting. It was about a project that was undertaken at the University of Coventry, working with Ingram. And Coventry were facing this problem of the £9,000 a year student fee. And the fact that it now, like all universities, has to compete for its students. Now, one of the answers that Coventry has come up with is that it promises its students that they will not have any extra charges. You get everything in for your £9,000 a year. So in this project, Coventry worked with Ingram to provide all the first-year undergraduates with the textbooks, the paper textbooks, they need for their course. So they had to distribute to the students 23,000 books. And this was quite a logistical problem, and I must say they obviously did very well. They managed to ensure that all the students in the first 2 weeks of the course received their textbooks. Now you'll notice that these were books, they were paper books that the students received. And I must say they do say that they are going to look at providing the students with some e-books next year through Vital Source. But again, and this is a worthy project clearly, and there was a lot of work involved, but again, we're in the old paradigm. Sourcing, having delivered in boxes 23,000 books and having to dish them out to the students one at a time. So you can see that we still keep going back to the old model. Now the other very exciting thing that I reflected on, which happened to me when I was at UKSG, was a presentation, some of you may have seen it, by a medical student called Joshua Harding. And I think, coming back to the theme of today's discussion, technology is the real new opportunity that we have today. And these slides come from Joshua's presentation, and I put the a link to it there. And we have the picture of Joshua before. There he is in the library, I think he's at Warwick, with his great pile of books, working very hard, but you can see it's a heavy weight that he has to carry around with him. But then Joshua got an iPad, and he established a completely new workflow. Everything, absolutely everything he does on his iPad. All his ebooks are on his iPad, all his notes are on his iPad. He is integrating his lecture notes with material from the ebooks, and really has a very, very effective workflow. So he is now the paperless student. But Joshua is finding all sorts of problems in maintaining that paperless world. And he talks about what his ideal workflow would be. The first thing he said was that he would love the textbook to be interactive, to be his study buddy. This would be an ebook which would remind him to revise a certain piece of text. This is an ebook that would be interactive and would test him on his learning. So he really wants an ebook that is absolutely, or an e-textbook, I should say, absolutely integrated into his studies, into the curriculum, and so on. Now, Joshua also said he wanted one universal store for when he buys his ebooks. He doesn't expect everything to be provided freely to him, he expects to buy some. And he talked about this one universal store. Now, I can see some of you sort of smirking at that and thinking, naive boy, how could this possibly happen? I think what his frustration is the lack of standards. And when he's buying an ebook for one source, he has to use a different app to be able to read that book. So that's what he's finding frustrating. The fact that every time he gets a book from a different source, he has to find a different way to read it and to integrate it into his workflow. One universal platform to view them on. Now I think he's talking about ebooks through the library here. Now again, obviously publishers are not going to have come together with one universal platform, I imagine. But again, what's frustrating him is every time he goes to view an ebook on a different platform, it's like learning to drive again. There are different rules, there is different DRM, a whole different set of functionality. And of course, he wants easy to loan from my library for free e-textbooks. And when he was talking about this, he was saying, well, you know, I use my library, but, you know, they've got the Springer ebooks, but they're not really what I want. I want e-textbooks, and my library can't provide them to me in an e-format. So we can see here one very progressive student really using the possibilities that the technology provides, but completely frustrated. Now, of course, we all know the problem of the business model that was alluded to in the report that I mentioned earlier. One of the questioners asked Joshua where he got his e-textbooks from, the ones that he showed us on his iPad. And he said, students do not steal. How he gets, if they can find the books they need. So he gets some of his books, he buys them from Amazon and other stores. Some he scans in. There's no other way that he can get the e-format he wants. He has to sit there with a scanner and scan all, cut the spine off and scan them all in. And of course, we all know that some students, I'm sure not Joshua, but some students will use the torrent sites to download the e-books that they cannot otherwise buy or borrow from their library. So I think the point he was making is that theft of books only happens when you can't get them in legitimate ways. So, as I say, there is this wonderful opportunity to use the technology in a new way to really educate people. And there is a real problem in as much that the publishing model doesn't really work to make that happen. So, some of you may have seen the Pearson's, I think it's called The Avalanche is Coming, where Pearson is talking about the publisher as the educator. But I think maybe it's time that higher education looked at how it itself can provide the e, and I'm using, as David said, the word books loosely here, the e-textbooks that students need in order to do their studies effectively and efficiently. Now, that would be a completely different way of working, and we would need to think about the models that would enable higher education institutions to make the e-textbooks the students need. One model, of course, and we were already seeing that happening, is that institutions could make the e-textbooks their students need and give them away in MOOCs or open education resources. Alternatively, an institution could make the e-textbooks that its students need and perhaps charge other institutions some small fee as a contribution. If higher education institutions are going to be the creators of the modern e-textbook, we do need to find a way to reward the authors. And I do think this is a barrier to moving to this new model, because textbook authors do get royalties from publishers. But there are many ways that institutions could reward authors that create e-textbooks. I'm not suggesting for a moment here that every institution makes every e-textbook for every course. There needs to be a sort of scale to make it economic. But there are certain disciplines where there are sufficient numbers of students that would make that viable. I mean, if we go back and think about Coventry having to buy 23,000 books, you can see for certain courses over a number of years, there would be quite a return on investment if the institution made its own e-textbook to suit its own way of teaching. And I think that higher education, if it takes on this job of creating the e-textbook, for want of a better word, could be truly innovative, really do those things that Joshua was talking about, move away from this flat PDF copy of the paper book, and really create the interactive resources that students are hoping to use.
Thank you very much, and bang on time. We do have a few minutes for questions. Is there anything? Yes, young lady here.
Young lady.
Sorry.
Asking me to check my ID for a drink. Kate Warlock from outside. I just wanted to ask about your comments towards the end about what higher education can do. I mean, publishers are spending millions on those kinds of activities. Where does the investment come from and the expertise to help institutions undertake those kinds of activities?
I think that's absolutely true. And if institutions were making their own e-textbooks, they could perhaps license some bits of content from publishers, or maybe they might want to pay publishers for some services. But also institutions themselves have a great deal of expertise. So I don't think it will be lacking in the institution itself. But you could have a mixed model where you're buying services from publishers. So perhaps a mixed model.
Yes, another question. Back then.
You spoke about the medic wanting his ebook, e-content, course content integrated with the course and all delivered on one platform. How would that be different from, say, an app that accesses the VLE, the university's VLE? Don't we eventually get to creating a
cross-cutting? Well, I'm no expert on all this, so but I think what he was saying was that he's not expecting the institution to provide absolutely everything. You know, he was saying he does expect to buy some of the textbooks. He expects some to be provided, by the institution. But I think what he was saying there is because of the inconsistency in the standards. Very often, he was having to use different, rather than be able to make a sort of neat collection of the e-books he's using, he's having to use different third-party apps to access different books. And I think that was the point, that he, rather than just having one app for his e-textbooks, he's got to have, three or four in order to read different formats and so on.
I think that's a really good point about the VLEs. And one approach is obviously to have a sort of core texts available through the VLE, but to incorporate resource discovery engines within the VLE, which go out and search whatever the library has subscribed to.
Ken Chan, I thought Phil's remarks absolutely right. Nikki Witt said a while ago, said the textbook is the VLE in a sense. And I thought Josh actually wasn't frustrated. I saw his presentation, and he was very successful. What he'd created was completely, by disintermediating the library, was his own, was an ecosystem. And it seems to me that's the battle that's going on, who controls the ecosystem about this. And from his point of view, it was Inkling are working in conjunction with Google and Apple. I think it's Google or Apple, whichever the one is. So what he's finding is a very successful digital ecosystem. Admittedly, medical students are very textbook-focused, even post-grads, so this in particular is not the same. But I thought he wasn't frustrated, he was very successful, he was paying money and basically disintermediating the university provision and going on and being extraordinarily imaginative and successful. And the people like Inkling and the others in the market are clearly going to sell direct to those students who...
Not all of them are poor, Ken. And he is clearly, he is clearly enormously successful and ingenious and so on. But, not every student. He's buying a lot of, his e-textbooks or scanning them in. He's also bought his iPad and so on. But not every student can afford that sort of investment. They have to live as well. Particularly medical students, it's years and years and years of study. So, not everybody can afford the sort of resources that Joshua is able to provide, for himself. And I think, if you go back to that Coventry thing, when Coventry is saying, our promise is no extra charges. And £9,000 a year... Even if you are going to pay it off over your life, you are coming out of higher education. That's just for your first degree. I don't know what it would cost if you're a medical student, for goodness sake. £9,000 is a lot of money. And I think, you know, one of the things that is happening is the whole landscape is changing. And quite frankly, if you're paying for £9,000 a year, you might well expect to be provided with the e-textbooks that you need. So, you know, they're not all as I'm not suggesting he's rich, but they're not all as rich as Joshua.
But, I mean, you highlight the conundrum, which is that textbook publishers get the majority of their revenue from students, and you can't, even with a £9,000 a year, you can't actually match that. Chris?
Chris Band. Picking up Ken's point about the ecosystem, what we've got on the screen at the moment is, of course, first of all, an open system, because ecosystems take in stuff and put it out again. But secondly, it's a very small ecosystem and a whole series of other ecosystems, picking up the point where you started talking about public libraries, but there's what everybody else is doing with e-books. And how far do you think that the model you're talking about with textbooks, and even that, presumably some textbooks are also easy reading for other people, how far can that small textbook ecosystem exist without being a part of a bigger debate about what happens to e-books generally?
Oh, goodness, that's a big question. I mean, of course, all these things overlap and so on, Chris. But I do think, you know, if we think about the themes, and if we think about this today, and we think about the challenges of educating people in a global, you know, economy, we won't be able to do it if we keep using the models of the last century, because, you know, other countries, other places will go ahead. And so it is the horseless carriage syndrome, really. And as long as we keep on saying, oh, we've got to pretend an e-book is a paper book, we're never going to move on, are we? Particularly in education, where we really need to invest. I mean, that's why, that's what we're about, isn't it, here? It's about educating people as well as we possibly can.
Yes, one last one.
Hi, Dr. Rayford from Nixon Coos. Just a comment, really. I was responsible for delivering the commentary project. The reason, the barrier, I guess, was that we felt, the university felt that the student expectation was to have a physical, to take away something physical. We, as an organisation, were able to offer both print and digital. And following the first year of the trial year, which was last year, Coventry surveyed the students and asked them whether they would be interested in a digital textbook. And it was overwhelmingly no.
But
the perception, from a student perspective, is that a digital textbook is an e-book, which is very different. And they have very little or no experience of a true digital interactive textbook. So we were really unable to, they were making a decision based on not having the information because their only experience of a digital.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to go into the moan fest thing here today, but I think, you know, very often if you were interviewing, and I think we've done some surveys like that in just collections, if you interview students who come up against really complicated, you know, when they're accessing e-books through the library, and they meet really complicated DRM, or they get turned away because there's more than three people using it, or there are funny licensing restrictions and so on. I mean, you can see in a way where that dissatisfaction, and not wholly, obviously, but I think, you know, there's a lot at the moment that would make students feel that the e-textbook isn't the solution.
Yes. I think, this year we're going to be introducing a very small trial of digital textbooks over 6 courses. And I suspect that the survey after this year is going to show very good results. And I do expect to see a higher percentage of digital textbooks for next year.
Okay, thank you. That's a very interesting point to end on. So thank you very much, Lorraine.